Hey everyone, welcome back to Crime Ghoul, where I'm your host, Brittany, and as always, I am here to bring you true crime. So, welcome to my 50th episode. I'm so excited to say that. I cannot believe I've done 50 episodes, not counting bonus episodes, but dang, here we are. Time flies by, and if you're thinking about making a podcast, just do it, because I cannot believe that I've been going this long, and I already have all of these episodes to show for, and I'm just really proud about it. You know, it's what I like to do. It's how I stay sane in my crazy busy world. So thank you for being along on the ride. Ugh, crazy stuff. But the other day I was thinking about fables, you know, like Hansel and Gretel, the little boy who cried wolf, Little Red Riding Hood, stuff like that. And then I started thinking about true crime. Like, I don't know how these thoughts were really coming up. They kind of just popped into my head. And I was like, you know, like, I feel like younger kids and teenagers aren't really taught these fables anymore. Like, I can remember growing up and being taught these stories, but I know, like, I've talked to younger people and some of them have never even heard of those fables or these fairy tales. And I'm just like, really? Like, there was so much to learn from those stories. And then you look at, like, Gen Z, no shade of Gen Z, but, you know, some of them, the ones I've met anyway, I've noticed are very ignorant about the world around them. And I just feel like there's something that's left out with their generation that they haven't been taught. And then I started to realize the different demographics of people who listen to my show. And I've noticed that recently there's some younger viewers present. So hello, younger viewers. I just wanted to point out that I think true crime has become like a modern day fable or fairy tale. Obviously, these stories are true, but there's something to be said for true crime cases and the fascination that surrounds them. And I think that's because we're able to be an outsider looking in. You know, these stories didn't happen to us. We can never understand the actual pain victims go through or what the victims' families go through and everything. So it's almost like that weird sensation you look for when watching a horror movie. It's like you're horrified, but you can't look away and you want to know what happens. And I think that's why true crime has become so popular. It's not as taboo to talk about true crime these days. I know when I was younger, I rarely ever heard of anybody talking about true crime. Like, even when I was a teenager, I didn't know anybody who was really into it. I didn't bring it up because it was dark and morbid. The only other person that I really shared this interest with was my dad and my siblings and my mom. Even some cases were way too much for my mom to hear, though. But now it's like true crime's everywhere, and even so much so that, you know, there's podcasts about it, and I see those younger listeners and I'm like, wow, it's really out here. And it makes me remember why I choose to talk about true crime. It's because I think there's always a lesson to be learned from these cases. And just like Hansel and Gretel, just like Little Red Riding Hood, and whatever other fairy tales are out there, there is always something to be learned. That is the point of a story like that. And with the absence of those stories being told to the younger generation, I think that true crime has really become an outlet for people to learn about the dangers that are present in our world and that are around. And not that we should be hypervigilant, you know, to the point where we're in fear for our lives and we're afraid to leave our homes, but I hope that my podcast could be a place where people hear these stories and they learn something. Even with you younger listeners, all of a sudden there's an increase in you. So hello. And I hope these cases can teach you something valuable. We are not invincible. We are not immortal, unfortunately. So I just wanted to put that tidbit in here because I see you and I know you're listening. And I just hope I can set a proper example for you. However, my content is a little explicit. So I don't know if you guys should really be listening to this, but I'm not your mom and I'm not your dad, but I can be here to tell you to learn something from these stories. Definitely learn something. And thank you for listening, you youngins. I know I'm kind of a nerd. Okay, whatever. I'm not that old. I'm only 26, so. But you know what I mean. I'm here to make sure you guys take something from these stories, and I'm happy to be the person who could share that with you. And I always want to be respectful to the families and the people who are involved in these cases, because These are true stories. I don't take that lightly, and I want you guys to know that I mean no disrespect in any way to anyone when I'm talking about these cases. So, enough of my little ramble. Welcome to episode 50. We're going to talk about some very grotesque things, and they're not for the faint of heart. I know I always say that. That's my little disclaimer in every little intro, is that these cases are not for the faint of heart. This one most certainly is not. It has torturous aspects to it, so please, if that's going to trigger you, or talks about sexual assault, if that is going to trigger you, just click out of the episode now, because I would not want to trigger you or make you or anyone upset. But otherwise, today's episode is about the truck stop killer. Yeah. So there you go. There's the little pretense there. I'm sure you can garner what it's going to be about just by this name that the media gave this killer. So let's jump right into it. Go brew yourself a cup of coffee, pour yourself a glass of wine, or perhaps take a shot of whiskey, because like I said, these stories are not for the faint of heart. And thank you so much to all of you for listening. Happy 50th episode. Yeah. We begin today's episode somewhere near Martinsburg, Pennsylvania. It's 1985, and a restaurant owner goes outside to a dumpster, and inside the dumpster, he finds something horrific. A small crowd begins to form around the dumpster, and the man begins to yell, "Stay away, stay away," and it's raining, and it's just not a good day. It's gross outside. And the man who owns this restaurant, or is in charge of this restaurant, found a body inside of the dumpster. It's the body of a teenage female. He immediately calls 911. People are wondering what's going on. How did a body end up in a dumpster outside of a restaurant? And it takes a little while for the police to get there, but as soon as they get there, they start marking things off with caution tape. They're trying to get the crowd to fall back. We would soon find out that this was a teen runaway who became one of the victims of the truck stop killer. For a while, we wouldn't know who he was, but we did know that he targeted teen runaways. And here's the thing. In the 80s, it wasn't uncommon to hitchhike. People hitchhiked all the time. It wasn't anything abnormal. There were people who did it back in the 70s and so on. And for a while, it was safe to do that. And then there are people like the truck stop killer who come along and who change everything. Police would soon find that there were other girls turning up in other states who were just abandoned on the side of roads, dead. And that usually was near highways or interstates. And it would take a while for them to identify this girl, just like so many others. So this is how we set the scene for who this truck stop killer is. So the common way for teenagers to get around back then, to save money if they didn't have a car, would be to hitchhike. Robert Ben Rhodes was a truck driver, so killing hitchhikers became really easy for him because he was always driving on the interstate, he was crossing state lines all the time, dumping hitchhikers wherever he could. And it was really hard for police to detect him. So he had a good thing going. But things would change for Robert in 1990. Specifically, April 1st of 1990. He was in Arizona and a state trooper decided to approach his truck. It was dark out and he shined his flashlight into one of the windows and he noticed something terrifying. There was a teenage female screaming for help, and it appeared she was chained up in the back of the truck. She was nude, had nothing on but shackles, and there was terror in her eyes. She was shaking, and she was afraid. The driver realized the officer was inspecting his truck, and he immediately hopped out of the driver's seat. And he tried telling the officer, "Oh no, we're consensual adults, this is just like our kink, this is what we do." And the state trooper was not buying it. He immediately handcuffed the driver. He walked him over and put him into the patrol car. He returned to the man's truck. The trooper had no idea what cold evil sat in his patrol car. Robert Rhodes had been stalking the American highways for over a decade, committing atrocious crimes against women and men. The state trooper was about to discover just how horrifying of a man Rhodes was. The trooper's name was Mike Miller, and he returned to the truck and he opened the back of the cab, and there he found Kathleen Vine shackled in what looked like a makeshift torture chamber. Kathleen said she bummed a ride from the truck driver, and after being on the road for a little while, Rhodes told Kathleen to go take, you know, a nap in the back. She went to sleep, and when she woke up, she was nude and she was chained up. Rhodes attempted to rape Kathleen, but she fought and she bit him so hard that he decided to back off. She had been bound, gagged, and beaten. And now, luckily, Mike Miller was about to come in like a guardian angel. He was there to save her. He immediately called for backup. In the meantime, he returned right back to his patrol car and found that Rhodes had been trying to escape from his handcuffs. He had a key in his pocket that was made specifically for handcuffs, and he would have gotten away if Mike did not return to the patrol car. So he got back in time to make sure that he did not get away. Once backup arrived, they started going through this makeshift chamber. Now that Kathleen was in safe hands, they could go through everything. They discovered a rape torture kit that Rhodes had made, and it was in a briefcase. In it were whips, chains, fish hooks, rope, and other tools he would use on his victims. And for weeks at a time, he would pick up a hitchhiker and keep them captive in his truck. He would keep these women and girls and act out his most horrifying sex fantasies on them. And when he was done and they no longer satisfied him, he'd kill them and he would dump them. Once police interviewed Kathleen, they found that she was mentally unstable and she suffered from delusions. She would tell them that she was going to bring a microchip to the President of the United States. However, she still had information that was credible. Like she said, she bit Rhodes. He had a huge bite mark bruise on his arm. And she was also able to tell police that Rhodes had boasted about how he'd been doing this sort of thing for 15 years. They were able to get more information from her, and this put Rhodes in prison. Only for a few years, though, for kidnapping charges and assault, sexual assault and battery. So within a few years, he'd be up for parole. So police were trying to scramble and put the puzzle pieces together and figure out how they could keep him in prison. They knew he was a very dangerous person. He was evil. Just from speaking to him, he had no emotion. He was callous, no remorse. So they started digging and they were able to search his residence. And there they found more horrifying things and incriminating things. They found photographs of nude and bound women. They also found blood-soaked towels and other incriminating artifacts. However, this evidence was circumstantial, and locating these women that he had photographed was going to be difficult. But they only needed to find one just to keep him in prison. There was one photo that really horrified investigators. It was of a teenage girl with short hair and a black dress. She had her hands up as if to ward off an assailant. She looked like a terrified deer in headlights. Soon they would find out who this young girl was. Michael Shealy was a detective in Illinois and he was working on a missing persons case. A 14-year-old girl named Regina K. Walters was a runaway with her 18-year-old boyfriend, Ricky Lee Jones. One day, the owner of a barn decided it was time to burn down the structure. He wanted to give it a quick look through before he did so, just to make sure he really wanted to get rid of it. And it was then that he found skeletal remains and immediately called the police. After finding the remains, Mike Shealy needed to find out who this girl was. He was searching for missing teenagers or women, and he was hoping to make a connection, and this is when he heard of Robert Ben Rhodes. It turned out that detectives in Arizona had arrested Robert Ben Rhodes, and he was currently in prison and may have committed more murders than they knew. So once he was able to get in contact with them, that's when they were able to put two and two together, and they looked at the photographs he had taken, and they were able to match the picture of Regina in the barn. Rhodes also had other photographs of this dilapidated barn. It turned out he had cut her hair off and photographed her shortly before garroting her. I hope I'm saying that right. It's garroting her or garroting her. Basically killing her by strangulation using some type of collar or wire or cord and just twisting it until he had successfully killed her. Not only did Robert torture his victims, but he tortured their family as well. He began tormenting Regina's parents and actually called their home one day, and her father answered the phone. Rhodes did not identify himself, but he said that they would find their daughter with her hair cut off in a barn. And when her father asked the man if she was alive, he simply hung up. Back in Arizona, detectives had discovered that he had a phone address book, and inside that book, they found Regina's home phone number. They were able to cross-reference the calls and place Rhodes at certain places at certain times and found that it had to have been him who called Regina's parents. Once law enforcement identified Regina, they went back to the truck and were able to further investigate and found a fingerprint and a strand of her hair, also linking her to that truck with Rhodes. But where was her boyfriend? Where was Ricky Lee Jones? Unfortunately, we don't know. We can only assume that they were together because they left together, so we assume that they were picked up together. Of course, Rhodes has never said whether they were together or not, or whether he killed Jones, but one can assume that he probably did. To this day, his remains have never been recovered. To see the terrifying picture that Rhodes took of Regina, definitely check out my Instagram, crimeghoul_. The picture will definitely give you the willies. Soon, a woman named Nicole Tuttle would come forward and explain that she had escaped Rhodes. She was looking to hitchhike when she got picked up from Rhodes, who seemed to be a really nice guy, until he wasn't. She was able to escape, and she was wearing a dog collar when she was found, and she was covered in bloody welts, and she waved down passing motorists when somebody was kind enough to stop and help her. The authorities were notified, and Rhodes was actually located, but Tuttle was so scared and terrified of him that she claimed to authorities that they had the wrong guy. She just panicked. Like, I can't even imagine being in such a state of horror that the man that's right in front of me is who hurt me and put these welts on my body. But I was still so scared of him that having two police officers around me wasn't enough to make me feel safe. It wasn't until later that Rhodes was in the newspaper that she confessed that he was indeed her attacker. But she refused to press charges because she just wanted to go back home to California. She was still that scared. She did not want to face him. I couldn't imagine what she went through in that torture chamber, and I'm so glad she was able to escape. But more and more victims would continue to pop up. Rhodes picked up a couple, Patricia Candace Walsh and her husband, Douglas Siskowski, in January of 1990. The couple were hitchhiking, and they joined Rhodes for a long-haul journey. And unfortunately, he immediately shot and killed Siskowski and dumped his body in Sutton County, Texas. But for Patricia, he kept her for over a week, and during that time, he tortured and raped her multiple times before dumping her body in Millard County, Utah. A lot of these victims were just traveling to do good things. For example, Patricia and her husband were going to a religious... The worst part of all of this is that so many of Robert's victims were good people doing good things. For example, Patricia and her husband were going on a religious retreat to go preach the gospel to anyone who would listen, and they were kind-hearted people, and they were known for their virtue and their kindness. And unfortunately, they fell into the hands of this monster. Similar to Nicole Tuttle, there would be another woman picked up by Rhodes who would also be afraid to press charges. Her name was Shauna Holtz. Shauna was terrified that she wasn't going to be believed, but police told her they had an extensive amount of evidence against Rhodes. But even still, she had just endured 2 weeks of nonstop torture and rape. She was terrified of him, and she just kept saying, you know, well, it's just going to be my word against his. There's not enough evidence. No way I'm not pressing charges, so on and so forth. Even though the police tried to convince her otherwise, but that's how scared she was. This man had a power over women, and it was awful. It was this awful, awful, painful power. And he put the fear of God into these women. And it's just so incredibly upsetting and just goes to show how evil he was. Lord only knows what these women went through. So who was this monster, Robert Rhodes? Well, Robert Benjamin Rhodes was born and raised in Iowa. His father was stationed in West Germany for the first few years of his life, so he grew up with his mother. In high school, he was involved in school activities like football and French club, and it wasn't until later that he began getting in trouble with the law in his later teen years. But it wasn't by anything major. It was really for fighting and messing with a car and all that stuff. And around this time, like, his father came back from Germany and he was a real piece of shit to him. Like, he was very abusive and would take his anger out on Robert a lot of the time. When Robert graduated from high school, he joined the Marines. And after that, his father was horrifyingly convicted of molesting a 12-year-old girl. But this case would never make it to trial because Robert's father killed himself in jail. It was his last moment of having power. He wasn't going to go down that easily. He wasn't going to let anybody convict him. He was very much a man who did what he wanted when he wanted, took what he wanted when he wanted, and nobody could tell him what to do. So he took his life so nobody could do that, put him away for the rest of his life. Obviously, what we can tell from this case so far is that Robert has a really deviant sexual behavior, and we're not really entirely sure where this came from. It's really unclear if he suffered any sexual abuse at the hands of his father, but we do know he suffered physical and verbal emotional abuse from his father. A few years into being in the Marines, he was dishonorably discharged for his connection to a robbery. During this time, he also became the father of a child, and he would have several failed marriages. His third marriage was his final, and he was married to a woman named Deborah, who said that he was extremely abusive physically, sexually, and emotionally. Deborah went on to explain that if he wasn't causing pain, he really enjoyed watching people suffer. Deborah was shortly hospitalized with lupus during their marriage, and in this time, Rhodes became really sexually aroused by literally anything. He became a swinger and an active member of the local BDSM scene, where he earned his nickname Whips and Chains. So Deborah was really pressured into swinging with other couples, even though she really didn't want to do that. And one time, Robert had actually purchased a sex slave for her. So this man literally showed up on the door and I guess was like, hey, baby, I'm here to be your sex slave. You tell me what to do, whatever. But she declined the gifted man and was extremely disturbed by that event. And that was really the straw that broke the camel's back. So after these failed marriages, after being kicked out of the Marines, he attempted to join law enforcement, which is really just like such a joke to me that he wanted to be part of helping others and like serving like this higher purpose when really like he was just a piece of shit. So I guess like, you know, sometimes people like this will try to go into jobs with authority where they could be in charge and they control the scene and everything. But it's just so sick that, like, you know, we're supposed to protect law. I mean, we're supposed to trust law enforcement to protect us. And, you know, the Marines is such like a highly respected thing. It's just crazy to me that this man, being the piece of crap he was, thought that he deserved a place in one of these positions. Luckily, he was denied entry into law enforcement. So after failed attempts in getting a job at multiple places, he decided to apply for the trucking industry where he was accepted. Unfortunately, America's road systems really helped him stay anonymous and provided this sick playground for him to practice his twisted fetishes and really explore his criminality. So Rhodes really took out his sadistic urges on these hitchhikers and other vagrants across the U.S. So he really preyed upon these hitchhikers or people he thought wouldn't be missed because he hoped that nobody would look for them or that, you know, a lot of it would be blamed on them running away from home and not wanting to be found. So this is really how he got away for so long, and especially crossing state lines, it made it really hard for these different jurisdictions to connect these murders and find missing people, or even if they were just runaways, that's what they were. There was no need to really look for them. Were they necessarily missing if they decided to run away? So this really helped him, unfortunately. So during this time, when he had all these people, these people in the back of his truck, he really tortured them in horrible ways. For example, he'd stick needles in them, put fish hooks in them, amongst other horrible, horrible torture methods, and would strangle them, shoot them, just kill them, dump their bodies. And he had no remorse. And once he was finally in custody, the police would say, well, not only police, psychologists would also say that he was one of the most evil people that they had ever encountered. And although he was only convicted for 4 murders, it's suspected that he is responsible for the death of 50 people. He murdered 50 people. It's insane. But of course, he has not confessed to any of these other missing people, but detectives have been able to put clues together and pretty much assume that, yeah, he was more than likely responsible for the death of these people. And this piece of doo-doo is still alive, and he is in the Menard Correctional Center in Illinois. So that is the case of the truck stop killer, otherwise known as Robert Benjamin Rhodes. Yeah, so if there's anything you learned today, kiddies, I hope it's that you should never, ever hitchhike. Yes, people still do that today, and no, you should never be one of them. So that is it, my friends. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Happy 50th episode to Crime Ghoul, and I hope you guys continue to check me out. Hopefully, I'll have a new YouTube video up on my channel. Let me know what you guys think. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, go leave me a 5-star review. Go leave me a nice little comment if you're feeling super sweet. And as always, there's different ways you can help me out and help this podcast to continue to grow and flourish. You can check out the link tree on my Instagram bio. That's crimeghoul_. Come talk to me over there, Twitter, Facebook. You could type in Crime Ghoul in the search bar. You'll find me. And my YouTube channel is Crime Ghoul. So I hope to see you there and I hope to talk to you soon. Let me know if you guys have any case suggestions or if you guys have any good recommendations for things to watch or read that are true crime affiliated. Let me know, because I'm always looking to find new content and explore new cases. But that's all I've got for you this week. So until next time, unless you're a trucker, please stay away from truck stops. Thank you.